Welcome to Big Broadway Energy, the podcast, with your host, Stephen Reardon. Thank you for being here, podcast listener. Guess what? That's you. Well, we're at it again, talking to some of the most talented humans in our little snow globe of sanity that is St. Petersburg. And when I started this podcast, I wasn't quite sure what it was going to be, but I'm so happy for what it's become. It's not just theater folks. It's not just badass arts educators. It's not just musicians. It's all of us expressing ourselves and inspiring others through their chosen artistic medium. How's that for being bougie as can be? Well, my guest today is not bougie at all. She is a dear friend for almost 20 years. She's a comic genius. She's an actor and a host. And she's here to hang out with me for the next 20 minutes or so. Please welcome my friend, Helen Keeney. Hi, Helen, to Big Broad. Welcome to Big Broadway Energy.
I'm excited to be here. I do have to correct you, though. I am very bougie. I just can't afford to be as bougie as I want to be.
That's kind of the truth for most of us. Helen and I go way back. We met, it seems like lifetimes ago for me because I've done so much since we met, but it's just like a recent lifetime away for you.
Yeah, it was the day I came to St. Pete to audition. And I met one human, and it was you. I got off the plane. I got sent to the studio. I auditioned in an empty studio. I guess there were people in the engineering room.
Right.
And I met you. Dan Gibson was there, who was the head guy from L.A. who I knew. And then I went home, and then you said, oh, you did great. You're going to have a callback. And I didn't. They just hired me. And it was an empty building.
And let's tell everybody what you were auditioning for.
I was auditioning to be a host on a shopping channel called HSN.
That's right. HSN, which was, believe it or not, people don't know this, the very original, very first shopping channel. It started here in Clearwater, Florida, and it had like 50 plus years here on the
47.
47. Thank you, Helen. Just recently, they just packed up and they moved to Pennsylvania because QVC, which is the parent company of HSN now, kind of combined both networks, and now everyone's in Philadelphia or outside of Philadelphia. But Helen, you decided to say 17 years is enough, and I'm going to see what else is going on.
I am a stand-up comedian. I did that before I was hired, and my daughter was little. It was mostly about not being on the road for Becky, and I raised her as a single mom, so I didn't want to be, you know, on the road and have, like, babysitters for her and stuff. She's 25 now.
She lives in California.
I'm on that red eye 24/7. She actually just got engaged.
Oh, that's so great.
Yeah.
You know
Becky.
I do. I mean, when she was very little, but I've stayed abreast of her progress on your social media. Yeah. And it's really exciting to see that. But yeah, we were HSN buddies a long time ago. And many people don't know that I started my TV business work that I've done at HSN. I was just like a lowly casting assistant. Then I kind of helped bring on the on-air guests and train them. And then once in a while, we'd have these host auditions. You know, I think when we hired you, we were really trying to make shopping TV a true like entertainment destination, right? We wanted edgy, we wanted irreverent, we wanted fun. And we found Helen. And your credits, you know, in addition to you being an amazing host for over 15 years, your credits as a comic are no joke. I'm going to just give you a smattering, you know, podcast listener, of what Helen has done in her career. She's done stand-up spots for Nick Mom, A&E's An Evening Out at the Improv, Lifetime's Girls Night Out, VH1's Stand-Up Spotlight, NBC's Friday Night, Comedy Central's Make Me Laugh, and she went on tour with a group called Three Blonde Moms for a bunch of years. So you've had quite a career before jumping over to HSN. So like, how was that transition for you?
Well, at the time I was just so relieved not to be on the road. And I know this is crazy, but when I was in LA thinking, I don't want to be on the road, my daughter's little, I just wanted to work indoors. I have a girlfriend who hosted a show, one of those fixer-upper shows.
Sure.
And they actually like made her pretend to paint stuff. And she was sent to the hospital for heat. And I'm not an outdoor cat. So I just wanted indoors, air conditioning, hosting, which was the other skill that I had besides stand-up. And I didn't know where QVC was. I didn't know where HSN was. And it was warmer, Florida, as opposed to Pennsylvania.
Sure.
And we were used to California. So that's literally, I said to my agent, send my tape to the warm one. I didn't know literally anything about the business. And it turned out to be a really great job for a long time. But this was kind of like an opportunity because they said, you can go or not go. And they were very generous with not going. And so I thought, I can always go back someday as a guest if I want to.
Sure, which I think that's happening. You're seeing that more and more people that were hosts.
Yes,
there's been conversations
exactly
around them coming back to being a guest on air.
But what I really love to do is stand up. And I had done it the whole time. Like, I never stopped doing it.
Right.
And I, you know, kind of just made a bunch of phone calls and I'm just back at it. I'm back at it. If you would like to know where I'll be, you could go to HelenKeeney.com.
I have to say, I tried my hand at stand-up for a minute, and this amazing human let me open for her when I had no experience, no real act, and just believed in me from the start. And I just always thought, like, Who does that? Like, you're just such a gracious, wonderful human.
Well, I appreciate that. And you were fantastic, by the way. But I've never seen anybody hate doing stand-up more than you did. You were like, the minute you got off stage, you're like, I am never doing that again.
It was so nervous. It was, listen, it is one of those things. And I hats off to comics. You know, I think people take for granted that's an easy gig. Not only is it not an easy gig because it's just hard to come up with things that make people laugh, but the schedule, being away from your families, being on the road all the time, not knowing when your next job's going to be, like, it is like the hard work of acting times a thousand, I think, is being a comic.
Well, you're kind of a one-man band because you're the writer, the producer, hair and makeup, wardrobe, travel agent.
Psychologist.
You're like all those things. And add being, I hate to say this, but being a woman comic has a whole other thing to it. You have to, you know.
Yeah.
Put up your dukes for.
You've told me some stories and I'm like, oh boy, the eyes get really big when I hear some of the things you've gone through on the road.
You know, it's just, I think I've had a lot of advantages, and especially in the beginning, because those TV shows were like, you know, we want a comic, a juggler, and a woman, you know, and I was the woman. So I got a lot of stuff early on that maybe there was other comics that were more qualified for, but they wanted to. Now there's so many women doing comic. But when I started, there was, I knew not only personally the name of every female comic, there was a handful.
Right.
It really wasn't that many.
Yeah. And those comics, you know, kind of went up with the guys that we know because they're all famous now, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And people that I started with, like Caroline Ray, who was, I don't want to say she was already established when I started, but she was only maybe like 5 years in, but she was already, to this day, she's supportive of me. She had a show on Game Show Network a few years ago called Caroline and Friends. And she had me come out and be a quote unquote celebrity panelist. Me and this guy, Ryan Hamilton, who's genuinely famous. He has a Netflix special and tours theaters and things. He was Jerry Seinfeld's opening act for forever. The few women that were there, like there's so few of us, we still know each other and are in touch. And
I love that. Yeah. I love that. It's like a sisterhood. And I think that, I mean, for acting and actors as well, it's very similar. And in St. Petersburg, the reason I came back to St. Pete, because I was in New York for a long time, was that the community is really what keeps you going when you're feeling like, I can't do this for like one more day. Like the people that surround you are like, no, you can, because we're all in this together.
Yeah. And there's definitely, when I came to Florida, here's what I didn't know about Florida, how big the stand-up community was and how many clubs and opportunities. There's a million ways to make a living as a comedian living in Florida. There's the cruise ships that all leave out of Florida. I did a Holland America this year. I worked for them. I worked for Carnival. So it's the cruise ships. It's the clubs, of course, like Side Splitters and McCurdy's, where you performed, which is amazing. There's another new club in downtown St. Pete. Coconuts just reopened at that bar Locals.
They
just reopened. And then,
oh, they have that back room. Is that where they're doing it? That's where the smart.
It's a great, great room. I mean, but there's just tons of other clubs. And there's these 55 and up communities that have these community centers, and they are very lucrative. And they, you know, they got all that time.
All that retirement money.
All that time and all that retirement money.
Let's talk a little bit about HSN again, because I think what's so interesting about what you did at HSN from your background, you get this gig, and like every new show host at HSN, you start in the overnights. And
use the word start very loosely.
Start
because you mentioned they hired me thinking, let's make this entertaining. And then they realized how, quote, entertaining I was.
Right.
And they sort of buried me for 6 years. I was in the overnights. I'd go to work at 11 p.m. I was on from 2 to 4 a.m. or 2 to 6 a.m., 4 to 6 a.m.
Yeah.
And I did that. And I raised Becky in the overnights.
In the overnights, which, you know, is a whole new ballgame for a lot of people. But I was thinking, I imagine as a comic, you had some pretty late nights, too, right? I mean, not overnights, but late nights.
Yeah. And, you know, I will tell you what I did then is I would go do my stand-up show and then I would drive to HSN and go on air.
So your stand-up show was your first act of your whole night.
It was the beginning of the whole night. It was actually easier when I was in the overnights because I never had to ask for the day off or have it be a day off. It didn't matter if I was working or not. I would just head to the studio. Shows were always over by 2 a.m.
Sure.
And they never knew what time I got to the studio because no one was there.
And it was like Vegas in there. You had no idea what time it was. It was freezing, no clocks. Yeah, it was crazy. Our clocks were letters. You're like, what's happening? I don't understand. So if you don't watch Hopping TV, you may not know that it is rife with characters. Celebs celebrities selling face cream and mom jeans and chefs selling bison burgers and nonstick pans. Who were some of the most fascinating people you got to work with other than me, of course?
I think one of my favorite guests is Shaquille O'Neal. He was surprisingly funny, hilarious. He
was selling size 24 shoes?
He was selling giant arm. There was a show host named Brett Chuckerman. I have a picture of Shaq holding Brett like a baby. Shaq had such a good sense of humor. And he took my phone and he did a video for Becky. He was like, no boys. Becky, listen to me. Blah, blah, blah. I still have that video. Whenever she starts dating someone, I always text them the video from Shaq. It's like he was
well now
so...
she's engaged.
Yeah, yeah.
He what better you watch know? It, yeah, you he know. Better. Maybe he'll get invited to the wedding.
She's like 5'2" and her fiance's 6'3", so I think she got
maybe
like
maybe he inspired her. Yeah.
But you know, there were so many. Oh, remember what was that supermodel's name? Janice Dickinson.
Oh, Janice Dickinson. Yeah, oh, she was
she
an
had
interesting
a ring,
show. Yeah,
and it opened up, and she said something on air like, "This is where I keep the poison, where I kill my husbands." And I was like, "Do we edit live TV? Like, is there any like stopping?"
There was a 7-second delay, and
oh
that's it.
God.
Remember,
I was on with Wendy Williams.
Yes,
as she was, she in the middle of the show just wandered off.
It was nice meeting you.
And
never to be seen again.
She just wandered off. She's sort of wandering around.
Sure.
But, you know, I'm the I just keep going. And I didn't know how to explain what was happening to the audience because I didn't know what was happening. There's just been so many things that have gone down. I mean, I just... Wasn't Liza Minnelli?
I got to tell you, that night of Liza was a one night only, and it was one of the best nights of my life. Because to watch... Now, I'm a theater nerd. We all know that. To watch someone like Liza Minnelli... come up because she was like 2 hours late because we go live at HSN and so the guests have to be there like 2 hours ahead of time. She got there 15 minutes before the show started. Our leadership was losing their minds. She gets there and she's being helped into the green room by her helper, her assistant, and she looked like an old woman and she went in that green room. I don't know what she did. She brought her makeup bag, which included the Sharpie marker, and in 14 and a half minutes she was Liza Minnelli. That is the coolest thing I have ever seen. And she did chain smoke the entire time, and had her cigarette off camera, and people were trying to grab it.
Oh, were they?
Yes, and she wouldn't give it. It was one of the best nights of my life.
Right. I mean, all that is, like, so amazing.
Yeah.
They're so, you know, it's so funny. Like, I won't even remember. Like, somebody will be like, oh, was that, you know, Twiggy? And I was like, oh, yeah, Twiggy was, I worked with her. I worked with Betsy Johnson. She's in her 80s. She did a cartwheel in the middle of my show. I mean, all these people, you're like, what? Are you making that up? I'm like, no.
It was truly a job that we, you know, I was so thankful to have it, not only because I got to meet amazing humans like you, but those experiences really do kind of give you, I don't know.
Katy Perry was just there.
I mean, it's so crazy. We had Sofia Vergara. We had Jennifer Lopez.
Yeah.
Oprah called in. Like, this was like not
Dolly
just.
Dolly Parton was just.
I mean, that's kind of awesome. It's kind of awesome. And I hope it continues.
People don't believe when I say the level of celebrity that. I remember when Kathy Najimy came on.
Sure.
She sold these things called, I'm going to get this wrong, charms. They were like arms that you put on under a sleeveless shirt so you would not show your arms.
Right.
But she was somebody who I just loved.
Yeah.
I just loved her. Character actress, like amazing.
Yeah.
Melissa McCarthy was on for a long time selling clothing, designing stuff. And it's just, I mean, just like.
It was like you're kind of a late night show host. I mean, my gosh, you got to meet so many incredible people.
I did,
and it's so funny because those people are usually prepped for those late night shows. At HSN, they're not really prepped. So a lot of times it was kind of like deer in headlights. Like you had to lead a lot of that stuff.
I've never watched The Desperate Housewives, but I personally know 80% of them because they've sold jewelry.
The Real Housewives, right?
Real. But not the Desperate Housewives Mark Cherry show, but the actual.
The real ones,
The fake real ones.
Right.
I
used to train them when they come on air and they used to get so mad because I didn't ever watch reality shows either.
They'd get so mad
at me when I didn't know who they were.
Like they'd come on with their handlers and their husbands. There was one that was like really fun. NeNe Leakes.
Oh, NeNe was the best.
She was the best.
She was so nice to everybody, too.
She was so nice to everybody.
Really gracious, and she had jewelry. So I really hope that HSN,
they all had
jewelry, you know, continues to be successful. It's weird, though, to not have it in St. Pete, right? Like, that little corner of the world was HSN for so many years, and you drive by it now, and you're like, feels weird. It's like the ceiling of the Trop being ripped off. Like, something is very weird that it's not there.
I don't... I keep thinking they're going to come back.
Right. They're just on vacation.
They're just on vacation. I'm like a girlfriend whose boyfriend said it's over, and I'm just waiting in the house for them to come home. They're coming back. They're going to get sick of the new girlfriend, and they're going to come back. But what they're doing is it's the exact same network. So they're going on, and there's a space at QVC that they run the network out of. So they're two separate entities.
Networks, right.
Networks. Yeah. But one is run in a giant facility, and the other one's run in a broom closet. I'm not going to tell you which is which.
Yeah, you have to do your own research there.
You have to do your own research.
I want to talk a little bit before we go about your work as a stand-up and sort of what was your inspiration when you started, and have you seen stand-up sort of evolve in a positive way, in a way that's really kind of more helpful to you as when you're writing your material? Like, how did you sort of start doing stand-up and material versus like how you do it now?
I remember when I moved to New York City to be an actor, I went to the American Academy of Dramatic Arts.
Wait a minute, so did I.
As I know you did.
and Bobby Ray Carter went there too.
Oh, I actually don't think I knew that.
Yes, lots of alumni.
And I was on off Broadway.
As was I.
The 13th Street Theater.
Oh, yes.
Do you remember the 13th Street
I
Theater?
I sure do.
I was in the Manhattan Punchline. Oh. I did all those things. And I had a journal. I would journal every day. And I remember in 1984 writing in my journal, I want to be a stand-up comic. And I was in a relationship with somebody who I ended up marrying who said that, you know, there's no way you can do that. You're way too sensitive. And we got married, and 4 months later, he got a girlfriend. So apparently I wasn't that sensitive. I could handle that. But there was a freedom about that moment that it was like, what do I got to lose kind of feeling. And I was in the Manhattan Punchline. I wrote a play that they produced so I could take any class for free.
Amazing.
And I took a class in how to be a stand-up comic. And the guy who taught it was the head monologue writer for Letterman for 15 years, this guy named Gabe Abelson, who I'm still friends with to this day. Very funny comedian as well. And at the end of the class, you're supposed to perform 5 minutes at the comic strip. So I was like, I want to go up a couple places before then. And my second time on stage, Dave Attell was hosting.
Wow.
I won $25 in a contest. And that woman who managed that club just liked me and made me a regular. A year and a half later, I was making my living as a comedian.
Wow.
And all my material to this day is very personal.
Yeah.
It's about what I've been through, through the world through my eyes. I don't do political jokes per se unless they affect me personally.
Sure.
Everybody here is a little bit conservative compared to my liberal politics.
Yeah.
So I've noticed, so when I'm working in Florida, I am cognizant of keeping it generic, my opinions. But as time has gone on and now I'm touring, I'm being more truthful about how my point of view on that.
I think you also are expert at playing the audience. Like, I was such a Virgo when I did my, 10 minutes of stand-up in my life. I wrote it to the second, and I'm like, bye, everybody. I was so afraid of what people were going to say or respond, and it seems like you feed off of that. Like, when you see somebody in the audience, and some comics think they're good at it, and they're not, but you actually... I've seen you do like 40 minutes with just working on the audience.
I did a show where I would do an hour of crowd work, and this is pre-pandemic.
Yeah.
I mean, I always intend to do my material when I walk on stage, but I definitely have ADD. So if somebody says something or I see something, I will just forget what I'm supposed to do and talk about that for the entire show, and then it's
And you
over.
Have such confidence to do that. Like, I would lay a kidney. Like, I'd be like, goodbye. I can't do it. I guess it's the actor in me. Like, I have to know my lines. Like, I can't go out there and not
like
know
that
my lines.
At all.
That's probably why I hated stand-up so much.
I think that's why I didn't like being an actor.
One thing I strive to do on the pod is to bring people on who inspire me too. You know, you inspire me for so many reasons. You were like a single working mom for most of your career, and then your daughter is this amazing human, like her mom. You're constantly reinventing yourself regardless of your age or your situation. You just keep going. Like, I just really am inspired by that because I have recently sort of said goodbye to my big corporate job, and I'm sort of just going and seeing if I can make this happen. And that has to feel good that you believed in yourself for so long.
I think it came a lot from my parents. My mom was a women's studies professor. She's retired now. But she said to me, and this always stuck in my head, if a human being can do something, if it's within the possibility in the realm of human existence, she told me that I could do it. You know, yeah. I just believe that.
Oh, it's amazing.
So when I'd see something and I was like, I think I could do that. There was never a, oh, maybe you can't do that. That never crossed my mind.
So you're not a Catholic. Because every Sunday I was told the things I can't do. And I'm like, not that, not that.
We were raised with just Joseph Campbell and mythology and, you know, intellectualism. It. And no, there was no can't. It was like, whatever.
And that's, I think that's what makes artists thrive. I really do. If you want more information on Helen, you can go to www.helenkeaney.com. That's HelenKeaney.com. And her Instagram is at the official Helen Keaney. One last question, Helen. I ask all my guests, and you might think it's cheesy, but that's okay. What does art mean to you?
Art means creativity and self-expression. And I think one of the things that has happened in this world is we've kind of, there was a lot of, to kids, like, everybody gets an award, everybody, you know, everybody gets, and I think that was mixed up with art and creativity, like, everybody can do it. But I think that art is one of those necessities in the human existence. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, you go to school and they're like, you know, pulling the funding for art. And it's I think, so to the detriment of society. Because I remember when I went to England for the first time, I was 17, and I was shocked that every little tiny town had a theater company. Yes. With professional actors that made a living, and the person who ran it made a living, and the customer made a living. And it was like being a plumber or a dentist. It was something that
a noble profession. Yeah.
It was a noble profession. Yeah. And it was not a, you know, this weird thing that people did for fun and didn't make a living at. Every town and it was important.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm so happy you've stuck around here in St. Pete and you are ramping up your comedy dates again. Please go see Helen Keaney if you can. She does keep that website pretty current. So I promise you, it is a fun night. I can guarantee you that. You always make me laugh. You always make me smile. And I love you, Helen Keaney.
I love you back.
Thank you so much for being here. And thank you, dear listener, for joining us on Big Broadway Energy. If you or someone you know would like to be a guest on the show, email me, will you, at bigbroadwayenergy@gmail.com. Until next time, friends, be kind, be curious, keep creating.